Great. Well, welcome everyone to another installment of Geek Speak. Looking forward to a great episode with David Paulman. We've got some good information on RIAs and Windows Azure to share with you. I'd also like to mention my co-host, Danny Diaz. Danny, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Doing very good. Can't wait for Thanksgiving to kick in. Spend some time with the family and just enjoy the time of the day, of the year.
So I hear you've got an indoor bike trainer, so I guess you're going to use that to work off the turkey tomorrow?
I have to, yeah. You know, cycling is a good sport, but up here in the MPA, it's not so fun during the winter time. So,
not great weather for that. Well, I can't wait for a little bit of pumpkin pie tomorrow, so I'm looking forward to that. That's my taste treat for Thanksgiving, and I guess I'll have to hop on the rower and work that off over the next couple of days.
It's worth it.
So I also want to mention, of course, our guest today is David Paulman. You all can take a look at David's bio, but David actually used to work on the WCF product team, and it now works for NewDesic, and he's going to talk to us today about RIA and Windows Azure. David, welcome.
Thank you. I just took a look out the window, and it's a great day for the cloud computing. I'm very excited to talk about this subject.
Awesome. Cool. So just a reminder, Danny and I are your co-hosts. We'll be picking out the questions from the Q&A manager, so please get those questions in throughout the show. What we'll do is David will talk about some interesting stuff. We'll try and find on-topic questions to ask him during the show. And really important to remember, this is your show. You drive the questions and answers, so it's all about you. Just to give you some URLs for more information, you can find more info on GeekSpeaks at the GeekSpeak blog. David's blog is at davidpaulman.blogspot.com. Danny's and my blog are here as well. And again, you can print out these slides, we'll make them available after the show with the recording as well. So with that, David, you have the floor.
All right. Well, we're here to talk about rich internet applications, or RIA, so let's start by talking about what they are. They're a trend that's getting to be a pretty big one now in application development. And why are we talking about RIAs on an Azure webcast? Well, Windows Azure is a great platform in its own right, and I get to have the privilege of talking about it daily, about how great it is and what its benefits are. But it's an interesting story where you combine Windows Azure with other key Microsoft technologies, and they can do some really amazing things, and RIAs are a great example of that. So that's why we're talking about that today. So what are they? Well, there's some characteristics of RIAs you can remember just by using the acronym RIA. So R is for Rich User Experience. The idea is that web applications can now have UIs with the quality of a desktop application. And so we kind of got started on that road through technologies like AJAX and asynchronous web services. But really, it's technologies like Silverlight or Flash that are the real breakthrough in making that a possibility. The I in RIAs is for Internet. And so RIAs are also web-based applications that are delivered over the Internet. And obviously, that makes cloud computing a great fit for them, although they don't have to be cloud-based. The A is for application. So RIAs, you should know, apply not only to consumer applications, but also very much to business applications. And what we're seeing is that RIAs are actually affecting the application model. So we're getting revisions to our architectures, different patterns are emerging, and Microsoft is, for example, giving us different supporting technologies for RIAs. And so that's why all of this is very, very relevant. We're getting some new tooling. So whether your application is for the public or for customers or employees, whether it's outside or internal, part of being competitive these days, providing a compelling user experience that people want to use and will want to come back to.
So something I've always been curious about in terms of different people sort of have different philosophies around what makes a RIA, and more particularly is RIA sort of an all or nothing proposition? That is, when you go to build an application, a lot of people think about desktop applications and web applications. And is RIA application, is that an entirely new category that's completely separate from those two models, or are there opportunities to sort of cross the boundaries with RIA versus web versus desktop?
So that's a good question. There definitely is some blurring going on. So, for example, since we've got Silverlight 3, we can have Silverlight applications that can run out of browser. You can literally enable them that a user can make them local applications. They can use, for example, when they're not online at all. there is some blurring going on there. And again, the whole idea is not to have the web be a second-class citizen for the quality of the user interface. But RIA is all very much about the web, so what's kind of interesting about them, if we talk a little bit about how this works in the Microsoft world, your technologies for RIA are Silverlight, of course, for the UI. Azure is not a requirement. Azure is a great place to put your RIA. And so they're delivered over the internet. You know, the way you get to a Silverlight application is you go out there and browse somewhere on the web to get to it. So you think, and you're seeing it run in your browser, so you think of it as a web application. But it's actually quite different in terms of what's happening technically. It's being downloaded and run on your local machine. So that gives it a very different character.
So do you have an example of a RIA that you might like to show us?
I do. Actually, I'd like to show two of them.
Okay.
One from Microsoft and one from my own. Can I go ahead and take over the desktop?
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Alrighty, are you seeing my display?
Yeah, I am seeing Cooking with SAML.
Let me go full screen here. So first of all, let me show you a somewhat simplistic RIA example. Woodrow Financial Bank from Microsoft, it's out there on the web. You can ding it and find it. And all I really want to show here is that the display is very fluid. You see animations and transitions. It certainly doesn't feel like you're browsing off and hitting individual pages and waiting for transitions and such. It's smooth. That's the whole idea.
So basically, one of the advantages here is that you're getting a much more responsive UI and less of that sort of clunky, go back to the server, pull down some information, render it in the browser, click submit, go back to the server, pull down some more info, you know, that kind of thing.
That's right, and there's a key reason for that, and that's your display is not tied, as it is in the first generation web applications, to client-server accesses. You're really away from this idea that when I'm doing something in UI, that equates to some sort of request response that you have to wait for. Instead, with RIA technologies, your UI is operating on its own, and in the background, asynchronously, you're talking to your web services or other supporting backend, and you're not compromising user experience by having people wait.
Right.
So let's look at another one, a little more elaborate. And this is called the Patient Journey Demonstrator. Also from Microsoft, very, very elaborate. I'm just going to show you a little bit of it.
I'm actually glad you're showing this particular demo, David, because typically when people ask me, you know, what should I choose, you know, RIA over, say, you know, just a plain old JavaScript-heavy web application that does a lot of the interaction that the user expects today. And typically what I end up doing is taking, you know, showing them this particular demo, because it shows how you can integrate video and how you can do some pretty amazing things when it comes to the interactivity of the application with something like Silverlight that you just couldn't do with JavaScript and jQuery and those technologies. So this particular demo here shows the power of RIA in a very nice way.
That's right, and I sort of deliberately started with a simpler demo a minute ago. I wanted to get to this one to show in particular that RIAs aren't just fancy window dressing, right? I mean, you can do very detailed, very real business applications in RIA. And of course, it does take a mind towards design. With all the great power of technologies like Silverlight, you're also faced with the responsibility to make good choices. So here's an example. We have a live EEG running. And we can look at past EEGs here. We can pull them up. I don't know how well the animation is coming across, but all this is very fluid movement if you're actually using it.
Yeah, I was going to just kind of mention that although through live meeting, it's kind of shows up a little choppy. When you're using this on your client machine, I mean, this is very smooth.
Very smooth, you can, very satisfying. And the idea, again, of RIA is they're actually want to use. They're compelling. You know? So it actually helps productivity that you want to use the app and want to come back to it.
Exactly.
So here we can go.
And folks,
yes?
Folks should actually be able to pull this up live on their own machines if they want to.
Yes, you need to go to MSC.
Sorry, go ahead.
You need to go to mscui.net right now, or just Bing the Patient Journey Demonstrator. So we came to some pretty fancy things here. Again, this may not come across well in the live meeting, but I actually have a color 3D rotatable heart view here that I'm able to interact with. And I have angiograms here that I can actually play. Here I'm watching some live video. And it's short, but I have a collection of them taken over time for comparison reasons.
Another thing there that's worth mentioning, David, it's how easy it is to take advantage of touch interfaces, you know, Windows 7, which is now touch-enabled. You can very easily just migrate your applications to support a touch interface and take even further advantage of this richness of a UI there.
Very much so. So one of the things about Rio is the experience, right? And so that's more than just, gee, what can I do in terms of visual sound? So the touch capability and as well as the voice command capability in Windows 7 is a great thing to take advantage of to add more dimensions to the experience. And Microsoft has also released some things recently. There's a set of Silverlight tools, for example, called Ribbit for Silverlight that add voice and telephony features to Silverlight. So anyway, you can bring that experience to be more rich in more ways. So you're going to have the user more involved in your application. That's what you want.
And just to be clear, when we're talking about applications like these, so the two examples that you showed here are, basically full-screen applications where the RIA is all that the user is interacting with. But is that the only option that you have when you're building RIAs, or can RIAs be something that live side-by-side or intermingled with an HTML application? So, for example, if you have an existing web application, is it possible to go ahead and enhance that with RIA technologies rather than taking what you have, sort of throwing it away and starting from scratch?
Yeah, good question. Nobody's putting up any kind of silos here that you have to be stuck with, right? You can combine things, and that's a great way to do fantastic work is to combine things. So one of the things you could do, for example, with Silverlight is, yes, the entire UI could be Silverlight, and perhaps you want to do that. Just as well, you could have a nice interactive experience that's a web part that you put in the SharePoint page. And very interestingly, with the PDC last week, we heard about Silverlight 4. We're finally going to be able to do it the other way around. You could have a Silverlight UI, but parts of it are an HTML page. And so, the barriers are being broken down here, and so this gives the developers more options to combine best-of-breed technologies where it makes sense. Whether you use your whole screen or a little app that they have somewhere, you should make a case-by-case decision on that based on what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, that HTML integration is a really key piece of the technology, I think, because being able to do that two-way integration, we already had the ability to do direct DOM manipulation from within Silverlight and vice versa. So being able to have that sort of DOM integration channel was helpful, but being able to take existing HTML assets and/or just plain web assets and be able to embed those into a Silverlight application, I think, definitely enable some additional scenarios because very few people want to go and throw out existing work that they've done that still works fine. So being able to choose where and when to bring in the RIA technology, I think, is pretty important.
Mm-hmm. So let me show you one other example here that is actually Azure hosted as well. This is something I'm working on. It is written for a slightly larger resolution, but we'll make it work here. This is called Business News Network, and it is about stock and news dashboard, but it's for your own business. That's what its data focus is. And before I actually go into it, you'll just notice from the browser address bar that this is in fact a hosted in Azure, because you see the .cloud.net in the URL. And this also is a multi-tenant application, meaning single deployment serves multiple companies. You see here I have two standard Microsoft mock company names, Contoso and Fabrican, as well as our own company, Nudesic. And of course,
there's something.
Yes.
Question that I have before we jump into the functionality application. Do you want to address quickly for folks who may not be familiar with Azure, how exactly does this application run? That is. So let's say we're going from ground zero. We build an application, a application locally. We're running it locally. Now we want to kind of push it into the cloud. What does Azure offer in that sense? and how hard is it to get that reapplication out there into the cloud?
Yeah. So if you're familiar with cloud computing in general, you expect most cloud computing platforms to do in particular two things for you. One is to host your application, meaning you can run it in the cloud, and the other is to have use in different ways to store information. So that's what we're doing here with Windows Azure. We have the application itself. The website is Silverlight application actually is hosted out there in the Southwest data center in Texas, and we are using storage services in Azure, both for things like images and video, but also we're using the SQL Azure database. So the database of the application is also out there in the cloud. And some advantages to doing that, as opposed to doing it in-house, not all applications are meant for the cloud. Some are and some aren't. But the cloud is really compelling when you want to have something out there that has needs to have global access and that you can scale up or down whenever you need to at a moment's notice. And again, this multi-tenant idea is very powerful because if you're operating sort of what we call a software as a service provider, where you're selling usage of your application, you want to have multiple customers. The fact that you can run that in a single deployment is a great cost savings to you.
Great. I want to remind attendees that this show is definitely yours to drive. So please submit your questions via the Q&A manager, and we'll get those posed to David as we go along.
So let's go ahead and sign in here. Okay, I'll need to adjust the display a little bit for resolution. Okay. You should be, again, I'm not sure how well it's coming over the live meeting, but we have a moving, looks like a stock ticker up there, except that it's actually showing you the things we want to monitor in this particular company, Contoso. So we have sales account, and you'll see this in the menu here. We have employees, we have product line groups, we have regions, we have account managers for sales. And these are all like, just like stock symbols, so I can pick a particular symbol I'm interested in, and various different types of content comes up for it. The idea here is you can take this very familiar metaphor, stock symbols, that everybody's very familiar with stock symbols and stock sites and business, and just map that very simply to things you want to watch. That's the whole idea. So one of the things we try to do here, there's a couple of the visuals here. So we have key performance indicators, and it's powered by SQL Azure database. We have Silverlight. We have a couple different views of this again. We have various types of charts, and we, again, using Silverlight and the open source Visifier charts for Silverlight, we can do lots of different types of charts. The user can change views, find a view that they find most comfortable, whether it's a pie chart or bar chart.
So David, one quick question. Are you taking advantage of anything, any other Azure technologies like the service bus or storage, or are you just simply just hosting it in Azure?
So,
where are you getting all this data from?
Yeah, so SQL, as I mentioned, the SQL Azure database is where the data is coming from, all of it. And the images and videos are coming from Windows Azure Blob Storage.
Okay.
And we're hosting. So we're using Azure in three ways currently. There are two other ways we can use Azure, although this particular demo is not. So when we actually use it for clients, we can secure it to the client's enterprise domain if they want to. And we do that with Active Directory, ABFS. And we also are planning on adding service bus to do notifications. So that if you're looking at this dashboard, and one thing about this dashboard is it's not just back-end information, but people can also add information that's in their heads. The whole idea is to have collective, a real knowledge base of wisdom. And so if somebody else is updating something while I'm looking at it here, I'd like to get a notification. I'd like to, kind of like when you review the site like Facebook, I want to know something changed. And so that's the usage of service bus that we have planned for the near future. Also,
so
when you do an application like this, you have often the need to integrate to data sources in your backend database. And so we're expecting the upcoming SQL Azure Data Sync to be a great tool for combining the cloud data warehouse with your backend data.
Yeah, that's a great point. Another question for you regarding this particular application. Did you start from any particular I know, for example, we've got out the Prism reference application that helps with implementing the MVVM pattern in Silverlight and WPF applications. Did you follow any of those patterns with this application, or did you start from any of those any particular starter kit, if you did, or any particular framework, or
in this case, we're doing and still are doing a lot of innovation about what the UI should be. We're talking about interesting ideas. For example, like this chart here. If I click on it, if I can spin around and see the backing data. So we're trying a lot of things out. So we actually are not using framework like that just yet. I think once we finalize our design decisions here, which we've mostly done, we probably will look at, time to do the commercial productization version of this, and do we want to use a framework at that point in time? Probably will.
Right.
So one other thing about this that makes it cloud-worthy is this idea that we have added social media to the business data. So again, the idea is to marry what your backend systems know with what your people know. And so we allow people to add a Twitter-like feed to anything they pull up here. And then you really get collective wisdom out of the organization. We also, and again, having the cloud out there in that neutral location is just all in the spirit of RIA's, being out there on the web and taking advantage of the web everywhere you can. We also let people do tagging. So if somebody wanted to do their own virtual list, they can simply tag items, and they can share this list with other people. And let's put this guy here in place. And people have an easy way to navigate to different items in a virtual list, basically. So social media, web hosted out there, rich user experience, these are all part of what RIA is about, and Azure is just a fantastic place to support those types of applications.
Okay, so most of the examples that we're seeing here are fairly complex. Where does somebody get started when they're getting ready to build an application like this? Can you?
So I actually wanted to talk about. You can tell from what I'm showing here that in the Microsoft world, you would use Azure and Silverlight to build these types of applications. There's actually a third leg, technology leg here that I'd like to talk a little bit about. Let's talk about how you would start an application here. The third part of the triangle here would be the web services that connect your Silverlight application to its database and backend. And, of course, we've had great technology for a long time, Windows Communication Foundation, something I worked on when I was at Microsoft, so it's near and dear to my heart. But we got something new that was shown at Mix last March, and we've had out in a preview, and that's called RIA Services.
Mm-hmm.
For a while, it was called .NET RIA Services, but at the last 6 PDC, it was renamed to WCF RIA Services, indicating that it's merging with WCF. So what those were about is... So for me to explain what that's about, let me just show you a little diagram I have here. I want to talk about how these RIAs are kind of changing the way we think about architecture of applications here. There we go. So you can see that. The software layers are really kind of moving on us here. So if you think about good reference technology just a couple of years ago, right, if you had a typical business application, 3 tiers, you'd have your presentation layer, which would really run on your web server. It would serve up the HTML and such that we rendered in the browser. You would have business web services. Those might well live on a separate application server. And, of course, you'd have your database. You might use something like SQL Server for that. And now as you start to go towards RIAs and Silverlight technology, you hit this application on the web, but it's really downloading and running on your local computer. So the presentation layer, you can really think of as moving forward to actually be on the user's computer. We might still be going back to that web server for web service calls, but really the application, we're away from that serve up a page client server model at this point. And then,
So what ultimately does that buy us in shifting those layers?
It might be a lot. So you've distributed the workload now from hitting the web server constantly to do page requests, right? Now the application is sitting happily on the user's computer. Again, it may go back to web service calls, but primarily using that user's computer's resources, and that makes a big difference on your web form. Suddenly it's being hit far, far, far less. In fact, it's being hit so far less that you probably don't need that separate application server now for your business web services. Possibly you would for security reasons, but now a lot of times you can say, well, my ASP.NET website that is basically doing this an access point for downloading Silverlight application, that's not doing much. So that's actually a pretty good place to put my web services. And so
you can save on hardware. You can also hopefully get better performance. Any downsides in terms of, what kind of class of machine is somebody going to need to have at the client end to run these applications?
So yes, if you're running, you know, a 386 from 1992, you may be huffing and puffing a little bit. I think we all know that we're in an era here where, although not everyone may have, for example, high-speed internet access, there's definitely a class of applications, especially business applications, that simply take that for granted. And I think a certain class of machine is also going to be, it's fair to say that if you're going to run a Silverlight application, you're going to need a certain class of machine.
You know, to me, one of the powerful things about RIA services is, so I mean, let's face it, when we're developing these business applications, there are things that we do over and over again. Like, we always have to do validation. We always have to do some sort of data shaping. We have to do some things that, you know, like we have to add range into data fields and things like that. And RIA services basically just provides a framework for that as well. And so it's not just, you know, great, I need to talk to my server, but it's also once I talk to my server, I can then shape my data in a very easy way. I can secure my data in a very, you know, prescribed way. So RIA services is definitely one of those technologies that you want to take advantage of when building these RIA applications, because it just gives you, you know, like 50% there.
Right, and so I mean, why we already had a good web service technology in WCF? Why do we have this? And we've WCF has recently added things like POC support, REST support. Why do we need something yet new again? Probably it's because of the shift, but also it's because Microsoft is trying to give us better end-to-end templates and technologies, so that you know, all the wire up you might do between data and entities and things over the wire, objects and services, that you have to do less of that manually. Is part of the idea here. So in a minute, I'd like to actually show you how we get started with RIA. But just to finish up this thought on the software layers of moving, because this is one dimension where the sort of layers are sort of moving forward close to the user's computer. But the second dimension is if you add Azure to the mix. Because now we have the ability to take any particular layer or all of the layers and move them up into the cloud. So none of this is to say that the traditional way you might have done things a year or two ago is wrong now. It isn't. And sometimes that's still the best way. But now you have a lot more options about using the user's computer more and you know, taking away the load on your web server, but also putting things in the cloud where scale is just as much scale as you ever want is sitting there waiting for you. So it's a great time to be architecting and designing software, because you have more choices than ever, but none of the old ones are being taken away from you.
So help our listeners to understand, one of the things that I think typically comes up as a question when you talk about moving to the cloud is, okay, let's say I buy into this cloud vision, I want to move my application into the cloud, and I go and I move my application to the cloud, and I decide I want to move it back on-premise. Which parts of an application are easy versus challenging to move, you know, to and from the cloud and premise without a whole lot of modification? I'm thinking of things like, you know, a typical web application is pretty easy to deploy into Windows Azure. But when you start using things, for example, like, you know, table storage and queue storage and things like that, that's a fairly Azure-specific piece of technology that doesn't necessarily translate as well to on-premise. Which, you know, somebody's thinking about an application that they want to move, you know, maybe eventually to the cloud, which pieces do they need to be thinking about in terms of those types of issues? That, you know, what translates well versus what's kind of Azure specific in terms of the application's architecture?
Great question. And in fact, the application that the last time I showed you here, this Business News Network application of mine, is in fact written to run in the enterprise or in the cloud. So I can speak firsthand to what's involved with that. When you're talking to people about the benefits of Azure, often they appreciate the benefits, but sometimes you'll hear somebody say, well, I have to do things differently for Azure, don't I? I mean, I'm worried about lock-in. I want to keep the option of running in Azure or not. So that's a fair thing to want. Actually, it has to be pretty easy. So if you're so first off, the question is, what are you developing in? So if you're if you're a .NET developer using current technologies, Silverlight and/or ASP.NET, if you're using SQL Server, WCF, WF, those types of things, you're going to find it pretty easy to have it both ways. If you're running something, if you're designing an application, however, where you need to strongly leverage some of the new things in the cloud that never existed before, take an example, Service Bus. Service Bus is going to give you a great publish-subscribe relay to the cloud. And if you're building an application that centers around that, and that's not a capability you had before in the enterprise, yes, you might end up with an application that can only run there. But for your standard business application, where you're using the typical current Microsoft technologies, it's actually very easy, because most of your application is going to be common code. So where do you run into differences? Well, first we can talk about database. So we have SQL Azure, which is a subset of SQL Server core database functionality, but very good. And that's been designed, the main difference between to most software, the only difference in SQL Azure is that the connection string is different, which is a great design choice because it means even software that wasn't written with the cloud in mind can often work with the cloud. Now, you might run into trouble if you use a feature that Azure doesn't support yet. So, for example, user-defined types aren't supported yet by SQL Azure. Most of your common needs will work. Your .NET code, your T-SQL, your stored procedure code in general should work. That's been my
opinion. Basically, if you're sticking within that subset that SQL Azure supports, that type of database access is pretty much one-to-one translation from on-premise to cloud. There's the only thing that changes is the connection string.
That's right. That's right. And so then the other question is, well, what are some of the other features of databases and the only type of storage we have? So Windows Azure gives us blob storage, and it gives us queues, and it gives us data tables. So let's think about for a minute about the blob storage. Well, maybe your application in the enterprise would use a file server, and maybe you might consider that blob storage is a rough equivalent to that in the cloud. But if you implement it totally differently, you know, the blob storage in the cloud is accessed by REST URLs or the .NET library for that, whereas, you know, your file storage uses file calls. So how do you handle that? Well, it's a very simple technique that works very well for that I've used. You simply define imagine a service, and you abstract that what your functions are. So for file type things, it might be get or put a file. Create a standard interface, and then implement a service twice, one for the cloud and one for the enterprise. Same calls, but one to the other. In your application at runtime, based on config settings, can realize it's running in the cloud, it's running in enterprise, and it can invoke the appropriate service, but with the same interface. And so you end up with
So you're essentially at that point creating a provider model that allows you to swap those providers out dynamically.
Yes, and this is your worst case. You probably only need to do it in a couple areas, and so you end up with 98% common code, and the parts that are different are still, you know, governed by a common interface. So it's very clear what's going on there. And anything that's specific just to the enterprise, just to the cloud, is in a small, isolated module.
So now let's back up a little bit. If I want to get started with this kind of development today, I mean, what do I start? Like, you know, what tools do I need? What IDE should I get? You know, how? Because we're talking about Silverlight, we're talking about Azure, and I'm kind of like, as you know, putting the developer hat, is kind of overwhelming. There's some great applications here, so especially this sample that you're showing. But I need to know, how do I get started? Like, what's my first step?
Sure. So this is one of the reasons I'm talking about this particular subject today. So it's easy to figure out how to get started with Silverlight and with Azure and with our RIA services. They all have their own places on the web, but there isn't that much yet to do them to put them together. That's one of the reasons why I had to talk about how you would combine them. So hitting them individually. The place to get the Windows Azure stuff, of course, is go to azure.com. Let me just bring that up here while we're talking. Azure.com, for anything related to the cloud, is your one-stop place to go. That's going to give you tons of information. It is going to give you and explain the business model. It's where you apply for an account. It's where you download SDKs. But in just understanding the platform, there are kind of three big pieces to understand. And I should explain, the platform is called the Windows Azure Platform, but it has three functional pieces, and one of those is also called Windows Azure, so I want to make sure you don't get too confused there. The Windows Azure piece gives you, I think we have a graphic here on the site, yeah, it's going to give you hosting, first of all. So once people think about cloud computing, the first thing that comes to mind is hosting and storage of the data. So it's not the only thing you can do with the cloud, and Windows Azure in particular has a lot of other functionality, but that's typically where people start. So Windows Azure is that piece that lets you take your application, throw it up onto to a portal to submit it to the Azure platform, and it will install on a bunch of VMs. How many VMs? However many you tell it to. Maybe two, it could be 100. And so that gives you a place out there in the cloud where people can hit your application. It also gives you non-database storage, and that comes in three flavors. So there are blobs, binary large objects, data tables, which might sound like a lot like a database, but lacks a lot of database features. They're just big tables, and queues. And you would use those for all the reasons you would in the enterprise, plus the queues are often used to tie together some of the layers of your application in the cloud. So So that's often where people start. And I should point out that you get with that SDK, you get a local cloud simulator so that you can actually do cloud development right there on your local machine, even before you have an Azure account.
You know, one of the things I wanted to point out, since you mentioned the diagram there, also on that page that you're hitting there, so what is Windows Azure video? That's Steve Marks, one of the evangelists on the Azure team, made that video, and it is hands down one of the best, you know, for somebody who has no familiarity with Windows Azure, one of the best sort of introductory short videos to kind of get the central concepts. So I definitely highly recommend that folks who are not familiar with Windows Azure take a look at that video. It's quite humorous, and it's also just very enlightening. We've got a question from Jeff. He's asking, what are the best training resources for Azure development, whether documentation videos? I mentioned that specific videos, but do you have any other favorites in terms of training resources?
Yes, absolutely. So right here under Developers Getting Started,
mm-hmm.
you're going to find really a step-by-step. Here's what to do. So read the information. But to me, the key link in all of this is right here, the Windows Azure Platform Training Kit. Now, what that is a whole series of information and labs and such and videos that you go through. And that's where you're going to go from just, you know, kind of getting an inkling of what Azure is about to actually having done things with it. By the time you're done with that, you'll have really touched every part of Azure, and you have a real appreciation for it. So I don't think you can improve on this track right here. It's actually follow the steps, and you'll find yourself enjoying the benefits in no time. And I'll tell you something else about Azure. If you haven't done anything with it, just even when you start using it just a little bit, the very first time you write a simple application and deploy it yourself to the cloud with this whole self-serving aspect there is to Windows Azure, you're going to feel tremendously empowered and you'll want to do more. It's very addictive. In fact, it sort of ruined me for traditional development. So the other two parts of Azure then are SQL Azure, the database. So, go over to that. And a subset of SQL Server core database functionality in the cloud. There's also a video about that you can look at. Does not include things like reporting services or analysis services at this point, but a very good database. And then the third area is called App Fabric. Early in the year, that was called .NET Services, but that's now called App Fabric. And this is going to give you two important capabilities in the cloud that you can kind of think of as making the cloud enterprise ready for you. So one is the ability to do communication through the cloud. It's a relay. It's really good for business scenarios. So if your company, for example, wants to send and receive messages to a number of other partner companies or your supply chain, you could use this. And it's very firewall friendly, so there's not any real work for your IT department to do to make this work. The sister service there is called the Access Control Service, and that allows you to set up security. You might be wondering, as I'm talking about putting these applications out there in the cloud, what if you need to secure them, for example, to your internal domain? The Access Control Service is one of a number of security offerings that lets you do things just like that. They let you do things like federate your security to not only Microsoft's things like Active Directory, but even something out there like IBM Tivoli can be made to work. So those are your three big pieces. I have been talking all the time about something called RIA services, but I haven't really shown it to you. So how about we take a quick peek at those?
Yeah,
sure. Sounds good.
What I'm going to do here is I'm going to just start a new project. And what will happen is if you install RIA services, you're going to get a new template that you didn't have before. So if you've done Silverlight programming, which of course you get that, by the way, you go Silverlight 3 is a separate download from MSDN. But if you've got Silverlight in your system and you're using templates like I have here, except Silverlight business application might be new to you. And that comes with RIA services. And the idea of that template is to start giving you a broader all-in-one starting point. So it isn't specifically about Azure, but we can we'll tie Azure in before too long here. So what I've done so far is create a new project of type Silverlight business application, and we're going to see what that creates for us. And then given us a solution with two projects. One's got the default name it gave me, Business Application 6, which is a Silverlight project. You notice the main page and app family there. And also has given us a web hosting project. Again, for Silverlight, there's nothing unusual about that. However, this is a little more elaborate than the plain vanilla starting points you usually get for Silverlight. So let me just actually build it and run it, and then we'll look into it a little bit. to find it.
So to be clear, right now you're just running this locally. You're not running it against any Azure local fabric or anything like that.
There is a patch for Azure
local.
I'm not even on the cloud simulator. Just giving
right.
us a Silverlight and Rhea services starting point. We'll have to add the Azure bit in a minute.
Okay.
And so this comes up, and this looks a lot like the navigation template that you may be familiar with, the Silverlight. So it's got the ability to have several areas of the site, and it also has a login facility built into it. So let's look at what the code behind is and why that's interesting. We have here several views from the navigation model, and we have, which may not be that big a new thing, but on the back end, we have a services folder that we need to have. And we have things like authentication services built in for us. And we have the ability to add these new types of web services called Rhea services. And so let's actually go ahead and add one now. What I'm going to do is I have a really simple sample database here. By simple, I mean really simple. I only have a few records in it. But it'll illustrate the point here. So I have a database called employees and a table called employee, and I have just a handful of employee records. Real simple. And I want to add a web service that's going to let me manage those employees. So how do I do it through your services? Well, I'm going to switch over to speakerphone so I can type. What we're going to do is we're going to add a new item to our web project. And what we're looking for in here is called a domain service class. And you got to be careful there because it doesn't have the word Rhea in it. There's something you have to know, domain service class. And I'm going to call this a employee service.
So the domain service gives us what?
It's going to give us a class that's going to be a Rhea service.
Okay, so this is essentially a way for our client application down on the user's machine to call into something on the web server that will give us both data and data related operations.
That's right. Now, if I was doing this as a standard WCF service, I also would go add new item and choose a WCF service, and if I start writing my web methods, and I'd have to define endpoints and config, and then when I was done, I'd have to go to the client side and create a proxy for that. And here's going to be a little bit different. So the first thing you see that's different is I've got a wizard here, and So I want to add an entity model for my database first. That's kind of the whole idea here. So I'm going to excuse me for having to back up here. First thing I want to do is do an ADO entity data model, because that other service we're going to add is going to tie to this. So I'm going to call that employees. And we're going to generate a different database. That's going to be the one I just showed you. So I already have my SQL Express connection string there, but if I didn't, I would just click New Connection and define it. And we'll keep the default names. And we'll tell it we want employee table.
So is any framework is the only option that folks will have in building these types of models, or does Rhea services support more than just that?
I think the idea is to support more, but right now they're going to be leading with that first.
It supports both Entity Framework and Lean to SQL as of right now. And obviously, you can always get the data from elsewhere. But to create a domain service, Lean to SQL and Lean to Entities is what we're supporting.
That's correct. That's correct. So now, I should have done that first. Now I can add my web service, and the whole idea is to make the web service tie to that. And in between the steps I'm doing, I am building, because some of this technology I'm showing you is based on scanning within your solution already. So I'm saving and building between my steps here.
And yeah, I was just going to say that actually that as a cache, if you try to add a domain service and you don't see any entities and you already added it, make sure you go back and build. Because that took me a couple minutes one time to figure that out.
Yes, same here.
And just so folks are clear, Right now, RIA Services is not currently a released technology. It's still in preview mode. Which version are you using currently, David?
So I'm using, I'm going to claim not to be an expert about this stuff, but it's very important and interesting that we all learn about it. I am using the WCF RIA Services that was released last week at PDC.
Okay, so you got the latest bit.
Yeah. And okay. You want to be on the latest because although it's good to have a shoot, HTTP is measurably better and easier to use, and so you want to do that. So what I'm doing here is it's found my employee entities data model that I did earlier, and that's what I had to be done first. And I just want to turn on everything. I want to be able to edit my data, and I want to be able to generate associated classes. And let's just click OK, and let it do its thing here. And let's see what it gave us. So it's given us this service class. And it's got methods in it, like get employees, and assert employee, delete employee, and such. Very simple, not a lot of code in it. Of course, these methods are yours to take over. There is an excellent video on just these starting steps with a good narration by Tim Hoyer that you can see, that I recommend. And OK, so we've got this thing. So what? What do we do with it? Well, I just want to show you, nothing too extensive here, but I just want to show you on the, again, I'm going to build it so I have it doing this thing here. But this is generating code on the client side automatically. And so if you think about what you had to do with a WCF service, you had to set up config. I'm not going to be going near config here. And you have to create a proxy so your client can consume. Well, here we're just going to go to the home view here, and we're going to consume directly. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to set up a data grid to show the employees, and then we're going to show how we would get the data into the data grid.
So while we're doing that, I know one of the things that that a lot of folks, or at least some folks who are, I guess I would say, some of the more expert developers tend to push back on is, is the notion of, well, there's, kind of magic happening under the covers, and they're not very trustworthy of that. What would you have to say to folks who are, concerned about, is there some black magic happening under the covers that I should be writing all this code by hand instead?
Well, first of all, I'd say that in a sense they're right. There is a lot of magic happening here. It's almost too magical because people like to know how things work, right? So one of the announcements last week that I was very happy to see was that RIA services are becoming WCF RIA services, because I don't think that was clearly the case earlier in the year. And I think there were some questions about, well, we have WCF, it's very extensive and has good low-level controls, and I know how to control it, how to extend it, and here's this new thing, and how am I supposed to think about the two? Well, now that we know that they are, in fact, being the WCF is going to be the foundation for RIA services, right? We're assured at PDC that all the standard controls and extension mechanisms you're used to are available to you. So we still benefit from the magic, but you'll have more of a way to customize, alter, understand how that all works. Having said that, there is actually not that much in these projects to actually see what goes on. You'll see in a minute that I'll be able to immediately reference the service operations that are there, but it's not a whole lot to see about how that's happening. There is some generated code you can see, but it's it is a lot behind the scenes, and I think that's a big part of the mission here is to keep the nice automatic nature of it, and yet let people fully understand how it's working and how they can customize that as they need to. All right, cool. So we're going to give this the name of Employee Grid.
While you're doing that, I want to note for the listeners that we have about 10 minutes left, so if you want to get your questions in, please get them in via the Q&A tool, and we'll put them to David.
All right, so what we're going to do now is we're going to wire this guy up. So I'm just going to add a loaded event here.
One of the things that you're doing there, David, that I just want to mention too is although you're showing an example using Silverlight, you can actually use RIA services to to also expose data to web applications. You can expose data as just a plain old service. So if you're writing an API and you still need to take advantage of the whole authentication and data shaping functionality and features that RIA services provide, you can still use that. So you don't need Silverlight in order to use RIA services. You can, you know, use it as a to expose in some type of API layer or even just to talk to a web client.
Yeah, I think that's very much true, although I think Silverlight was obviously a primary target in mind as they made it. But, yes, all these technologies are versatile beyond the these media combinations. So notice I had to add a namespace up here for business application 6.web. That's because of the actual service we're referring to is actually out there in the web project. But here we're working in the Silverlight project in the home view. And when I created my domain service that I linked to the employee table, I called it employee service. The little name thing that goes on here, on your client side, if the name of your service ends in service, it becomes context. So employee context is how you get at employee service. Create a new one of those, and it will know what to do. And what we want to do is we want to load that employee grid, that data grid we did. So we want to set aside in the source. And we can simply say context employees. And so, you know, if you're doing this by more traditional means, you'd have to go out and you'd have to invoke an asynchronous web call to go out and get your data. And you have to decide, do I think I can do it in one shot, or do I have to do it in a series of batches? And here you're going to see this has actually been made pretty easy.
The one advantage here is less code in terms of explicitly having to build out those asynchronous calls to your services. And then I wanted to point out for folks who might not be familiar with Silverlight's data binding, when you're setting that item source, that's just standard Silverlight data binding code, right?
That's right. So yeah, anytime you have any kind of collection-based data binding, like an item list to a list box or a data grid, you just set the item source to a collection of objects. So you can see this working, and went right off the bat and loaded the data here. The difference here is what we had to do, or more specifically, what we didn't have to do to make that happen. What RIA services are going to give you are the fantastic ability to wire up into the data model and link and asynchronous services and just have a lot of good automatic behavior. Here it figured out what to do to go off and query the data and bring it in. And I didn't have to write I didn't have to invoke an asynchronous operation, and I didn't have to do a completed call, and I don't have to worry about that I have to batch my data. It's designed, now that's not the only thing it's good for. You can add your own service operations or anything you want to, but specifically has this in mind and making this a joyful experience for you. And so, as I said, there's work to be done to get familiar with it, and I think as we see updated versions of this, more and more work is being done to let you see the mechanics of it, as well as get the benefit of the automaticness of it. But it's certainly where things are headed, and it's nice to see this holistic and approach in the design of the technologies we're getting, right? We're moving out of the world of, well, we use this technology for this layer and this technology for this layer, and now things are more end-to-end, which is nice to see. So I know we're almost out of time, but if we don't have an immediate question, I thought we would just talk about how I would make this an Azure application.
Sure, that sounds great.
I just wanted to, one of the questions in the queue was, you know, where do I get the bits to this new WCF RIA services? And the answer to that is if you just go to the Silverlight.net portal. So if you go to Silverlight.net/get-started/RIA services, it will be right there. You can also do a Bing search for WCF RIA services, and it's going to be the first post there. And that gives you a link to the newly released bits that were announced last week at PTC.
Andy, do you happen to know if there's a README or anything in there that would address issues of moving from, like, the July bits to the current WCF RIA services bits?
You will have to. I haven't tried that myself, and there's nothing that I've seen around that. Remember that this is old beta technology, so we don't have a path to upgrading from one.
So if I can speak to that a little bit. So, yeah, it is true that between the CTPs, right, sometimes things have changed enough that an older sample from the old CDPs might not work with the current CTP. You can do is you take advantage of the name change, right? So it just became WCF RIA Services just last week. So anything you find with that specific name, WCF in the name, you can be sure is recent and just for the current CDP. But looking at the Scott Guthrie and Tim Hoyer's blogs, it's a great way to keep up on things. Tim in particular is writing on the stuff and putting up samples and videos all the time. And I think that's the way to keep up to date on things.
And as I noted in answer to one of those questions, we will be posting URLs for all of the sites that we've mentioned when this GeekSpeak recording gets posted to the GeekSpeak blog. So I'll be keeping track of those.
All right, time to make this an Azure-hosted application in 1 minute, 60 seconds. I choose Windows Azure Cloud Service, and I'm adding a project to the solution, and I'll just keep this Cloud Service one for the sake of time, some name for it. And this gives me a wizard where I can add all sorts of roles, web roles and worker roles and such. I don't need to add any, and the reason is I already have a web role. It's the Silverlight hosting application. So I've added this new Cloud Service project you see here at the bottom. And you notice it has that area called roles, and that it's currently got a little complaint there because it doesn't have any roles yet. Well, we can right-click, add web role project and solution, meaning some other project in my solution is going to be a web role here. And there it is. It found it. It's the hosting application for a Silverlight application that we had earlier. We select that, say OK. And one other change is to make this new cloud service project the startup project, because we want to use our cloud simulator when we try running it. And one other thing we might take a look at are these this definition file that defines. You can see now it has the web role of the web hosting project. And if you look at this config file, we can control the number of instances. So for example, let's go from 1 to 2, because 2 is kind of the practical minimum in the cloud. Let's save all this and see if it runs.
So I noticed you've got actually an editing page there. Do you have the November bits for Azure as well? Is that coming in with that? I do. Okay.
Every CTP is better, and we have some really nice tooling in the latest update.
Yeah, I noticed it also has the VM size flag there, which
yes,
is
four choices now. Yes, very nice.
November bits.
And if you're using SQL Azure, you may have struggled a little bit with a few rough edges in the SQL Server Manager Studio where you couldn't see the object model. Now we have that too. So Azure DC is getting better and better and better. Now you notice at the bottom of my screen, the Windows Azure Simulation Environment is launching, and I have the blue Azure logo in my status bar. This is my cloud simulator, developer fabric and developer storage. And so our app is starting up, and you see that it is loading there. I think we'll get our data in a minute. I want to show what's happening behind the scenes. So if you did a minute ago when I hit F5, I was running the Cassini, the Visual Studio web server. But now something, I still hit F5 to run this guy, but something very different is happening under the hood now. Now we have a thing called the Developer Fabric, which is a local simulator for the cloud. You see our services running, and you see there are two instances running. Okay, so this is how the Cloud Fabric works. So I ask for two instances of something I got. If I ask for 10, I get 10, and it's a different animal. And one thing we won't have time to show you, but the last step beyond this, you might tie in again to your SQL Azure database, which is a connection string difference here. And you would use the manager portal, Azure.com, to upload this to the cloud. It takes about 15 minutes to do that, max. And you'd be on your way. So you can see that the moving these great new RIA service technologies that already integrate nicely with Silverlight over to the cloud is really, generally speaking, the slam dunk.
Great. So that's a great overview of bringing RIA services to Azure, a lot simpler than I think most people probably would have figured. So any last minute points you want to make? We're going to kind of close this out and provide a feedback link for our attendees. If you please fill out the evaluation, we'd love to get your feedback on this particular GeekSpeak. But any last comments, David?
Just that, you know, if you're an Azure person, check out Silverlight. If you're a Silverlight person, check out Azure. The synergies between those two technologies, especially now that we have RIA services as well, it's just fantastic. And for myself, it was exactly 1 year ago, the day before Thanksgiving, that I said that I was going to spend the coming year investing deeply in both of those. I couldn't have claimed to have been strong in either of those a year ago. And I feel like I can do pretty much anything I want to in them now. And so it doesn't take that much effort to really get fluent in technologies. They're very rewarding to use. I think if you just get started with them, you'll find that that's true very quickly.
Well, great. David, thank you so much for being on GeekSpeak. Danny, thanks for co-hosting here. Any last comments from you, Danny? Anything people should be aware of?
No, I just kind of echo David's comments. I think that both of these technologies are the future, and as developers, I think we should start getting ready for these things. So take advantage of the content available on the sites, Silverlight.net, MSDN.com. Just take advantage of the free content available there and just kind of prepare yourself for this new wave of developing applications.
Awesome. Well, thanks, everybody, for attending. That'll wrap up this GeekSpeak. I'll throw it back over to Eric for any last-minute logistical notes.
All right.